Three, two, one.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all the things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, the meta, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Ezra Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at Revive. I'm joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwill, SVP of Integrated Marketing. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello, hello. Happy post-Thanksgiving, pre-holidays, pre-2023.
It's those 3 weeks or a couple of weeks of like, who am I? Where am I? What day is it? I don't know. I'm just trying to get through life. And I'm also joined by co-host Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy at Revive. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Post-Thanksgiving food coma Monday.
Yes, all the comas. I will say, though, I did take this weekend, this long weekend, to do some like personal growth stuff and like really shut off the consumerism, the capitalism of it all. The big C's. It was really nice.
I love that. We got a sidebar on that one. Can you share two bullet points of, you know, what that means to you?
What that means to me is just like really getting in line with what I want, what I need, and then calling that in. So a lot of meditation, and a lot of just sitting and thinking about, okay, what is it that I want to cultivate? What do I want to bring into my life? As well as some projects that I've been just procrastinating on.
Well, that's also so very Thanksgiving. You know, what do you want to cultivate? I mean, it just seems very appropriate for the time of year as well.
So I understood the assignment. Yay. All right, so let's jump in. What headlines? There's been a lot that's been going on these last several weeks. It's hard to keep your head on straight just because there's always some shifts. But Chris, what have you been seeing as some headlines?
Oh, lots happening at Meta. Many things at Meta. So the first thing is really some pretty significant layoffs. And I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about this a little bit offline, that what we see happening in tech in general in terms of layoffs. So there's some interesting things. They reported laying off 11,000 employees due to investment in perhaps pandemic trends and adding staff and not seeing those pandemic trends hold, as well as the global economic downturn, of course. And then, of course, the metaverse, and investing lots and lots of their cash in the metaverse, and maybe a little bit too much too fast.
For context, their third quarter financial report, which I'm a little bit of a geek, I like to look at the numbers. Their revenue was down 4% year over year, but big deal, the costs and expenses were up 19% year over year. That's huge. And I love one headline from Barron's, which is Meta is spending like an oil company. So they're spending more than ExxonMobil. It's wild, but you know, they're trying to build something.
Wow. This is a commodity more than oil. Wow. That's kind of mind blowing to think about. But when you say that, you know, what they're like, I'm thinking of the profits and loss of P&L sheet, like their profits aren't as high, but given all of the Twitter things and people moving their social media budgets away from Twitter, I'm wondering if we see an uptick in a Meta product such as Facebook, Instagram, and moving over to other products such as like TikTok and the other things. That'll be really interesting to see how all of these media trends shake out.
It will. I keep thinking, I think I've said this with you all before, maybe not on this show, but feels like we're at a big inflection point with social media. Completely remains to be seen what's going to happen with Twitter over the coming months and year. Obviously, you know, Meta's had some drop in advertising revenue and other issues, and TikTok's coming out from the, you know, coming from behind. But then you've also got people exploring Mastodon and brands on BeReal. So this next year, my prediction is it's going to be very interesting to see, do the giants hold their footing or do we start to see a shakeup?
And do we even start to see some comebacks? There was like a moment there where like, oh, is Tumblr coming back from the dead?
I hope so. I love Tumblr. Love me some Tumblr.
I did love some Tumblr. It was like,
yeah, Tumblr's hiring the Twitter folks. You know, the, Tumblr has a big campaign saying, hey, if you got laid off from Twitter, we'll take you.
Ooh, okay. That'll be interesting to keep an eye on.
So what's the Twitter recommendation still, Stephanie? I mean, you know, like a financial analyst, are we sell, buy, or hold? When it comes to being a marketer, what do we do?
Sure. So I think right now, at least our official stance is continue to hold advertising dollars. So recommending that brands at the moment continue paused on their advertising. Now, that doesn't remain the same for organic presence, right? People still have questions. Consumers turn to Twitter all the time for health questions. So don't leave your patients hanging. And your customers, customer service standpoint, there might be a chance to, you know, pause on organic, but that's a discussion, an internal discussion. I will say, update over the weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, is Elon Musk published on his Twitter some slides from a recent deck that he presented, which includes the future vision for the product. And there were some interesting things in there, like he wants to increase the length of a tweet to 420 characters instead of 240 to make long form tweets. He talked about advertising as entertainment. He talked about payments as an option to roll onto the platform. Not a lot of details there. So I think the good news, if you can call it that, is there's, you know, some fast moving product updates. I'll leave it at that.
I mean, and just from the those that consume and use Twitter, I often continue just to think about like Black Twitter, you know, staying strong. It's still a strong platform for communities to share information, to poke fun at the world. It's like a little online safe haven for those that are old enough. Maybe remember like a Black Planet. This is still that space until something else new pumps up and replaces it, if that is a thing.
Yeah, there was an amazing NPR segment on that last week, Des. I don't know if you heard it, but it was incredible. And it was speaking about that specifically and saying, you know, Black Twitter, the community is saying, we're going to hold strong. You know, we've been through so much as a community, a little bit of Twitter shakeup and going to make us go away. And the space has just been so critical for civil rights movements. So it was a really powerful and emotional piece they did.
We are a resilient people, that is for sure. But speaking of resiliency, yes, we've talked about tech, a lot of layoffs that are happening, especially more so in the social field. But we're switching over to health. You know, what are some trends that we are seeing in health, especially when it comes to digital health, tech, wellness, all that great stuff. What are we seeing? Stephanie, I know this is your passion.
It is. So one of the things that we've been chatting about as a crew here is we're seeing a shift in the health industry, not healthcare necessarily, but health industry overall, seeing a lot of blurred lines between health, wellness, well-being. Was a buzzword at Health, the conference, kind of moving away from the wellness word into more well-being. It's more meaningful and saddled with less baggage around, you know, I think wellness has sometimes meant things like, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow Goop, right? But well-being makes us think about the bigger picture, social determinants of health equity. Anyway, that's a bit of a sidebar. But the point being, seeing a lot of gray area and blending between healthcare and health or well-being. So the overall wellness / well-being / health space is just growing so rapidly. Over the pandemic, we saw a large explosion of wellness organizations and tools and products, both from a funding standpoint, but just in terms of consumer growth. And one note from MindBody's 2023 prediction report was we're seeing more of a true whole human approach, which that's not a new phrase. Want to be clear, but just remembering that from a consumer standpoint, consumers approach health much more from a wellness standpoint that I think we do in our healthcare and business world, right? The consumers are focused in their, as we would call them, living moments, their day-to-day moments around how do I feel good? How do I feel good today? That may be weight, that, you know, concerns about weight. It may be, you know, how do I get more exercise? It may be aesthetics. It may be, you know, certainly primary care, but less so than just day to day, you know, feeling good, nutrition, those kinds of things, stress, mental health. So a recent report from the Global Wellness Institute noted that even as we emerge from the pandemic, even with the ups and downs we've seen in this space, the prediction is that the wellness economy will return to robust growth post-pandemic, projecting a 9.9% average annual growth, reaching $7 trillion in 2025. So let me just pause there and hear, you know, from you all, what are you all seeing around that or hearing around that?
Yeah, people are consumers in general. There's conversations around how people are taking more control in their experience. And throughout the pandemic, you know, there's been the introduction of new technology where, you know, look at how DoorDash and, you know, Instacart and all these delivery things have taken hold. You know, QR codes came back from the dead. But people are able to control more of their life from the palm of their hand. From a different industry standpoint, with, I know, Chris, you have a background in banking, finance, to retail, to all the things where they're creating a better customer experience. And, you know, this is translating to big money because this is, you know, where we are, depending on, you know, generationally where you are, regionally where you are, it has its, you know, moments. But what I'm seeing is just people essentially overall is wanting to take more control over their experience. And that's leading into health experience as well. Chris, what are some of your thoughts?
I mean, I also think that consumers, the first place that they think about when they need something that's out of the realm of healthcare is not necessarily, I'm going to go to my doctor, right? I mean, you know, I have thought many times about losing a few pounds. I don't think about talking to my doctor. That said, somebody who may have a more significant health condition or more of a struggle may consider their physician, right? So I'm not thinking about healthcare providers for some of these things. Certainly if I think about, you know, spa type services or aesthetic type services, certainly my health system may offer them, but they're not in my mind kind of the go-to for that. So it's about piecing together things that kind of fit my needs, I guess, is the way I think about it.
Yeah. And that's a really, really good point. So just to break apart when we talk about the wellness or well-being industry, or even the tech side of it, as you said, Des, of, you know, these tools that we can hold in the palm of our hand that can make us healthier. I'll call that Well Tech, although I believe that's actually the name of a VC fund. But anyway, so there's just some frameworks. GWI has a way that they've broken this down, and so does CBI Insights. So we can maybe link to both of them. But some of these categories are things like personal care and beauty, which, by the way, not $955 billion industry. And I think if in healthcare, we've traditionally never thought of that as part of the healthcare industry, personal care and beauty. But to your point, Chris, consumers certainly do. Where am I going to go when I have a skin issue? Well, I'm going to walk to Walgreens or maybe pop to the Whole Foods, you know, whole body, or, you know, those kinds of things. Maybe I'll do that first before seeing my derm. But it also includes wellness tourism, public health prevention, personalized medicine for sure, but spas as well, mental wellness, wellness real estate, I think, is an interesting category here. Then, of course, there's fitness, sleep, corporate wellness, food and beverage. So just to give a note of some of these brands, you know, everyone from, yeah, Peloton for sure. I think that's expected. But, you know, Daily Harvest or Juice Beauty or, you know, certainly Goop or Thinks, Parsley Health, Noom. I mean, the list goes on, but these are some of the organizations that, again, typically we don't consider to be part of healthcare, but consumers do. And many of these organizations are the ones that are sprouting up primary care services and sprouting up women's health. Just to give a quick example, I got a postcard over the weekend, a piece of direct mail that I spent 10 minutes with.
See, and it works.
It does. It was. Yeah, you're right. Chris is our direct mail profit. But it was for a new location of a organization, a health organization popping up in Nashville. That's a combination of women's health, gynecology, even minimally invasive surgery, plus aesthetics. So I can go get my Botox while I go to my gynecologist and talk fertility. And my mind was blown. It was incredible.
This whole body care right there. And this isn't new. When you mentioned wellness tourism, it reminded me of I went to Hot Springs, Arkansas back in the spring, just because, I don't know, if anyone remembers a little-known movie with Matthew Broderick called The Road to Wellsville. I don't know why that movie lives rent-free in my brain for the last 30 years, but here we are. You know, this is something that's always been a part of the culture. It's like traveling, doing whatever you can to find and have your health needs met. You know, outside of traditional medicine, you know, there's all of these different alternatives. But speaking of which, like, we think of it as aesthetics, but, you know, our skin is our largest organ. And a lot of times you can kind of tell where something is, you know, happening health-wise by a person's skin, by their complexion. You know, we are trying to maybe, you know, fake our way to facial health, whatever, through different treatments and what have you. But still, that is a part of that. And when you had mentioned, Chris, earlier about how we think about where we, like, when you're saying, like, okay, I need to lose weight, I'm not going to my doctor. And oftentimes we're not able to get that kind of advice from our doctor. They'll tell us, you need to lose weight. It's like, well, can you help me? Can you give me steps? And so that's where that gap gets filled by doing our own research, finding things, social media, tying that into it. That's where a lot of information has been shared, good and or bad. But that's where a lot of us have gotten more knowledge about what's available, what are options, what else can I do beyond, you know, just going to the doctor when we don't really think to do that for certain things.
You know, and I wonder if it's got, does something to do with start point, right? So if my start point is I need to lose weight, I may do different things versus my start point is I have diabetes and I need to eat better. Do you know what I mean? So I wonder how close, or even think about, now we're talking about things like beauty and weight loss, which are obviously kind of maybe a little bit, you know, far afield from traditional healthcare services. But what about things like acupuncture? You know what I mean? I'm trying something for pain that I have and it's not working, right? I'm doing traditional conventional medicine and it's not working. So what about acupuncture? What about cupping? Or what about some of those other things? And then it starts to kind of blend of, okay, those are things that I might say, if this isn't working, dear doctor, what do I do next? And are these options, you know?
Yeah, and that's really become a trend with, especially in the oncology space, right? Is, okay, I'm going to go to my doctor for medicine, for Western medicine, clinical trials, but I need to make up my own proprietary method. Like, I think of my mom who very much did that. She was on the newest, hottest clinical trial, driving all over to the best health systems in the country, but also would get acupuncture and yoga and Reiki and, you know, green juice. And because it's your life, you'll try anything and everything. And so, yes, I'll take my doctor's advice, but I need to also take every other piece of advice I can possibly find on the face of the earth. And that's not something that, you know, traditional healthcare has weighed in on or helped package.
You know, so it was so interesting to me is to see some of those lines, right? And I actually, honestly, I didn't know that there's a definition of complementary and alternative medicine, right? So we hear alternative, we hear complementary, we hear integrative. What does it mean? And in doing some additional research around kind of what medical professionals think about it, you know, alternative are treatments other than conventional medicine that people may pursue. Complementary are things that can be pursued to complement conventional medicine, and integrative is the mix of the two. So honestly, it's kind of interesting that we're talking about kind of where the things blend or pull apart and are separate when you think about that as kind of the framework and how medicine thinks about it.
And yeah, when you mention acupuncture, you know, there's also the chiropractics and massage therapy that, you know, years ago, those weren't considered methods that were used in Western medicine, you know, those Eastern medicine thinking, but that's been brought more into the lexicon of conventional medicine, and the fact that it is covered by your insurance now. You know, if you were to just pop into your chiropractor, that might not be covered. But if your doctor prescribes it, or if it's a medical need from your treatment, you know, for pain relief, from nausea relief, from your cancer treatments or surgery, you know, your doctor can prescribe those things. Therefore, it's covered by your insurance. That's just an example of how, like, what else can hospitals and health systems be doing?
Yeah, it gets me really excited because I think this is a big role marketers can play, right? Which is, and I think about content marketing here, but it doesn't, you don't even have to have some of these services to help patients think about how to put complementary approaches together. And I don't want to step on, Chris, you had an incredible stat that you'd shared with us before, but stat about what patients actually want.
Well, particularly around cancer patients. Is that the one you're talking about?
Specifically, yeah.
And I think that, you know, Stephanie, you mentioned it earlier. That's an interesting place where it makes sense that integrative medicine is a place to play, right? So I found this awesome stat that about 2/3 of people with cancer want to know about complementary therapies. So things like nutrition, massage, meditation, before even starting treatment. And about, this is even more interesting, 40% of people, if they could go back in time, would have chosen a hospital that offered, you know, integrative medicine. So those complementary type of therapies. And, you know, again, I think we can all probably point to people in our lives who've had cancer and have had to seek outside support for some of these things that they didn't feel like they were getting within healthcare. So it just seems so ripe. And it also seems that there might be the case for more rigorous scientific support, and there certainly is some, of course, that then translates to payment. Because I know I sound like the old gal of the group where it's, I was like, well, what's the business model and how is money going to be made? But all of this are great ideas, but at some point in time, we can't forget about some of the things that bind us in our world around payment.
Okay, I was having an idea. I was having a light bulb over here. Maybe, Des, you saw it floating above my head. So it makes me think, you know, Chris, to your point about scientific support, the jury is out on some of these, right? And I think it's important to put that out there front and center. Like, very much, there are many of these, even supplements. Doctors disagree on whether you need them or you don't, or who needs them. You know, things like acupuncture, very, very much there is a differing of opinion in the scientific community. So one example, wouldn't it be interesting if we had a panel of, you know, physicians live on Facebook or wherever, right? Video weekly, whatever it could be, debating these, talking about them. I would love to hear that. I would love to see and hear some of the backdoor discussions, behind the scenes discussions that maybe physicians are having. Do we need vitamin D supplements? Who needs them? How much do you need? Is it just a moneymaker? Those are the kinds of information that I think, you know, that is something that a role that marketers can play. We know physicians want more visibility. We know that consumers want this information. Let's marry the two.
I love that. I mean, give the people what they want. Like, here's a way for you to stay relevant. These are the conversations that people are having. They want to know what else they can do. Like, the research that I was doing around men of color was more around the fact that, yeah, they know what they need to be doing, but they want help. They want guidance in how to achieve that, which is why a lot of folks are going to these new entrants, these new tech components that can help them with that. But Chris, give us an example of what some hospitals and health systems are doing in this space.
You know, I mean, I think we're seeing more and more of it in the research that we did. But honestly, I couldn't even find a great stat around how many health systems offer complementary and integrative medicine. But we do see some various consortiums, right? Certainly, we see hospitals dabbling in some of these, right, or health systems. But we also see consortiums like the Osher Center for Integrative, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. The Osher Center for Integrative Medicine, which is a collaborative of 11 AMCs, and each have programs in education, research, and clinical practice where they share best practices, some big name institutions like Harvard and Vanderbilt and the like, right? There's also the Academic Consortium for Integrative Health and Medicine. There's 66 institutions in the States, as well as others across the world. And it's really about advancing integrative medicine through health through health system practice, actually clinical practice, as well as academic research. There's a lot happening, but it still seems like, again, there's this push and pull in the medical community around how much of this is proven. Certainly some of it is proven. Some of it's not. How do we recommend? How do we get, I would like it kind of to telehealth, right? I mean, there are physicians who really embrace telehealth and how to use it. And perhaps there are those physicians who are maybe less willing to kind of look at some of the opportunities for it. So I think it's just fascinating in terms of how you really think about making it a legitimate offering in a health system, right?
It reminds me of just institutions in general. It's a little harder for them to turn this big ship around, right? Which is why it's been so easy for these new wellness, health, and was it well-being companies to really come in, because they're so customer centric, they're able to just start building their platform based on that. Like, what does the customer need versus a legacy organization like a health system, medical institutions, where they have so many different things that they have to juggle that it makes it tougher. But part of what I was also doing over the Thanksgiving break was, you know, a mindset thing. It was a meditation, and that, you know, it's not scientifically proven, however, based off of, you know, persons and person-to-person experiences talking about how having the right mindset, you know, of health, of wellness, that can help shift your, like, for example, cancer outcomes. You know, those are those conversations. More research could give us more into what else we can be doing to supplement to make that whole health process happen. But it keeps going back to this institution of like, well, I don't know if that's a thing or if that's important. But meanwhile, all of these other people that are taking a chance on it are thriving.
Yeah. So let's talk money. Let's talk the money side, because I think that's, you know, it's the elephant in the room typically on these things. And even I was in a panel at Health that was about food as medicine. And one of the conclusions of that panel was, well, legacy health organizations, traditional healthcare, we don't make money on these kinds of initiatives. And so the system has to change before we can really truly do this. But let's just run some numbers here. So if I take, I'm just looking at a, you know, one of the food delivery services in CBI Insights Wellness Market Map. So, you know, they have approximately potentially $256 million of annual revenue. Now let's take the, you know, just a random AMC, maybe $16 billion revenue. Okay, 1%. So, well, first of all, an AMC is probably not going to come out with a food delivery service. Although, I don't know, there's been a lot of, you know, food as medicine prescription programs. So my point is to go through all that effort. It's a significant business model. There are many challenges, right? It's a whole different ball game. It's not exactly an incremental, you know, type of business to add on. And the revenue is chump change compared to surgeries. Chris, you have a lot more knowledge than I do about, you know, how typical at least health system finances work. What is your thought on how do we move into this space and get consumers what they want while also keeping in mind the business aspects?
I mean, I think the best way to move into it is to consider, and again, we'll just bring up cancer. Where are those spaces in those service lines where you can really prove the value of integrated medicine, right? That to me is the place to start. Now, of course, you also have to have, you know, you also have to have some payer support, but even payers are moving the needle. Stephanie, we were talking about this in the context of another assignment we were working on, where we were using examples of payers coming to the table with food as medicine in certain areas. So, you know, there is some movement there. And I think you have to start where you have the best potential business case. You know, the one thing we have to watch out for is that we don't create another offering that is only for those people who can self-pay. There will be some of that, right? But maybe that's also where we need to prove the case, right? That there is an opportunity here and then move it into other areas. I don't know, Des, I'm betting you have some thoughts on that.
No, I'm just wrapping my head around just some of the key takeaways from this conversation, you know, because it's been aspirational, it's been inspirational, but, you know, make it make sense. You know, thank you, Stephanie, for bringing us to the dollars, which is what a lot of our clients are focused on. But essentially, like, yeah, there are some short-term and long-term goals. One of those short-term goals could be that the content marketing standpoint, Stephanie, you'd mentioned, where there's opportunities to get your clinicians out there on platforms talking about wellness, giving the advice that people are looking for. You know, not necessarily just focusing it on a service line, but really getting at what is it that consumers want to know, need to know, and then talk to that. And then you can maybe tie that into a service line to get them into the doors, but start with the customer first.
Yeah. So let me share just kind of low hanging fruit, low effort, and then like big dreams. So on the lowest side of it, I do think physician visibility is a great place to start. And many organizations already do this, right? Like often it's through blogs or social, but like ramp that up a lot. Like let's think about an overall physician visibility approach where we're meeting people in the platforms where they consume content, typically video, typically mobile, and having an always on drumbeat of, you know, physician recommendations that does so much for your existing service lines. Now ramp that up all the way. I would love to see a health system, an AMC, start a subscription program. Yes, people will pay if it's really strong, of, you know, personalized recommendations, opt in based on your health needs, have your doctor communicating to you. And I use doctor in quotes because I think it could largely be marketing driven. We're not talking about doctors having to have a second job here. But think about like a really high quality content platform where you're getting verified scientific information that's easy to understand, where your doctor knows what you're getting and it's personalized to your needs. I would pay for that. And then, you know, maybe there's ways to also open it up for those who are not able to pay. So to me, that's like, so those are things that marketing can totally control. You don't even have to open an integrative medicine center.
And from a long-term standpoint, it's, you know, as Chris mentioned, some of this stuff is a little harder to bring in. So as, you know, CMOs and other industries, you know, they're the folks that the organization looks to for product ideas, understanding what's going on in the market. In creating a product based on the need or adjusting, shifting the product based off of market research to understand like how it's being used, how it can be made better. So taking a sense of what are some things that we can be doing that can gain traction and will have like the least amount of resistance, knowing that, you know, you've got a large ship that you would have to turn around in order to do this. But this could also be that opportunity for you as a marketing lead, as a CMO, to be that person, be that voice that's bringing forth new ventures, new avenues of revenue. You don't even really have to create a new product. It might even just be the packaging of it, which, you know, you are a subject matter expert in yourself. So that's just one of the long-term goals. Be thinking about that.
Yeah, bundles, right? We've discussed before with some of our clients bundling care. Like I mentioned before, where it's like women's health plus aesthetics. What an amazing bundle. But there are other things like primary care and diagnostic services and women's health or sports medicine, nutrition counseling, weight loss, those kinds of things that might be bundled in an interesting way. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, figuring out the payment portion of it. It could just be when you schedule primary care, you get a notification. Would you also like to go ahead and schedule your annual women's health appointment? Could be that simple, you know, just nudging people to also schedule other appointments when they're thinking about scheduling one. Or maybe it's just the packaging of your landing pages, keeping instead of service lines being so siloed, you know, mm-hmm. what is heart health related to? There are so many other relations there, and maybe there's ways to think about that. So it doesn't have to be so complex to get into this.
1,000%. I was definitely thinking of the different health-related things that, yeah, if you are a diabetic, then there may be some other connections that you need to be paying attention to. So just streamlining that. But of course, we can talk about this all day long. So we'll wrap it up. Stephanie, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to dive deep into, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And make sure you share the show with your friends and colleagues and family as you see them over the holidays. And give us a review and rating on iTunes. All of that would be appreciated, especially if it's 5 stars. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we will see you next time. 3.